A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. A Christmas treat for you today with a man that you already know and love. The last time I spoke to Armando Iannucci was back in January 2020. The creator of The Day Today, The Thick of It and Veep was promoting his new series, which is set in space, Avenue 5. And he was about to start work on the second series. I was in the middle of a stand-up tour. We all talked about what the coming year 2020 might hold in store. So I caught up with him for a special Christmas conversation and asked, have you been up to much in the past 2 years?
Quite a bit. Do you mean globally or, I mean, personally?
How was the last almost 2 years for you?
Fascinating, interesting. Some of it sad, some of it kind of quite good, some of it hard, some of it fulfilling. I mean, as with everyone, I think everyone. It's funny, this, you know, the pandemic is both something that we all, it's a public thing and that we all watch it. You know, we watch it on the nightly, the news and the press conferences. And so we all share that story. And yet each one of us has our own little story to tell about the last 18 months. Mine was, yes, I was all, yes, when we spoke, I think David Copperfield was coming up, was in the cinemas.
Yes, and
was,
exactly.
And Avenue 5 was about to come on. Avenue 5, a show about people trapped, trapped under terrible leadership, not knowing who was in charge or what was going on, which I thought was my attempt to get away from present day politics and just have a bit of fun in space, but turned out to be some kind of commentary on what we're about to go through. And I think I was, my plan had been to write with the rest of the writing room, second series, and then shoot season two of Avenue 5 in sort of September of last year. We moved it to November of last year, but after 2 weeks we shut down and I decided to shove the whole thing to September of this year. So we've just finished it. We've just finished shooting now, actually. And this series very much does reflect a lot of the paranoia and confusion that's been, we've been going through the last year. I also, I wrote a poem. That's the other thing.
Which, well, yes, exactly. I was going to come on to that. There is sort of COVID, in inverted commas, in Avenue 5. When will we be able to see it?
I think probably about May, June of next year, because I've still got 4 months to kind of edit it all and put it all, you know, put all the posh bits of the graphics and the music in. So, yeah. But no, it's not about COVID, but there is a lockdown episode. But there is a general sense of, you know, groupthink and various groups believing one thing and various groups believing the exact opposite, and things like evidence and facts not being quite as important as they once were, and things like that.
So let's talk about the poem.
Oh, yeah.
Pandemonium, verses on the current predicament. Now, I have to confess, Amanda, when I heard you'd written a mock epic poem, I thought this might finally be the thing that Armando Iannucci's done that I can't get on with.
Okay.
Because I'm, unlike you, I didn't do a PhD or even start a PhD on Paradise Lost.
Yeah.
And I thought this is, and actually I loved it. I read it in one read, you know, once you get it, once you sort of tune into it.
Yeah.
It is brilliant. Oh, well, Explain the concept of a mock epic poem.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned it because it's really not. You're not meant to have read. You're not meant to have had any prior knowledge of any aspects of epic or you know 17th century poetry or anything like that. For all you're meant to have is some kind of inkling of what we went through for the last 18 months. Also, I thought it would take us away from being very, very specific. So our hero is someone who's called Orbis Rex, which is Latin for world king. But the gods have thought we'd be terrified if Orbis Rex came among us. But, you know, so they rearranged Orbis, the letters of Orbis, to make Boris. And that's seen as a much more kind of friendly face of this great hero. And then it accounts his great epic battle with the pandemic. You know, he rides out to meet it on the field of war and shakes hands with it, because he says he's shaking hands with everyone, and then falls into a deep sleep. And in a lot of these epics, our hero goes underground. They go down to Hades or hell. They go into the underworld. So Boris goes into the underworld. He thinks he's in hell, so he thinks he meets old Nick, the devil, but in fact it's Dominic, who is this blind, again in epics there's always a blind prophet who leads our hero, shows him visions of things that he normally can't see. So this blind Dominic is condemned to ride in a cart drawn by lots of mice and insects and other plague-bearing animals for all eternity round a pillar to test his eyesight, because he says he is blind. And so it carries on.
And so it goes on. I tell you, have you got a copy of it there?
Yes, I have.
Could you read? I mean, I've got my copy here with all the corners folded down.
Okay.
Could you just give us a little bit of it, just so people can get a sense of what Pandemonium is like?
I'll read out the bit where Orbis speaks to the nation for the first time.
Perfect. Yeah.
But rush, there came a noise, whose firm sense and hollering uplifted hearts in every house. Folks, said Orbis Rex, we face an enemy unwelcome, who we shall fight with every sinew we can spare. For let our watchword be hurrah and no more. Orbis stood in a mighty chamber newly raised, reflecting all his glory, rebounding off teak panelling and glorious carpets. Fantastically, he cried, we shall put on our armour, or, if none available, improvise with sheets and cladding, or cloth barriers and plastic bags, or paper if need be, or pulp. The point is, we are ready. Fantastic. Next to Orbis stood twin magnificent angels, strong in wisdom and wise in facts. Sweetness and light were their names, and from them shone unreflected sense and caution too. I concur with Orbis and all he says, spoke Sweetness, though science suggests I fleshen out his words so they may make more digestible sense. We are not ready, at least not yet. Agreed, added Light. But if we were equipped with every mode of repulsion, every cape and gown, every datum and science in the land, then yes, we would be ready, is what he said. It's fantastic, you agree, said Orbis, swelling wide. And fantastic too, the future waiting for us if we snatch the victor's goblet from Pandemic's mouth. So I say we will ride out and rid this realm of any wretch that impedes our life. We will tell it that after 12 weeks it must be gone. And it will heed my words, for they are as nifty as ghosts in flight and can scuttle any mortal threat. We are great, and if not great, then getting near it. And so we will tell this vermin to vamoose.
Terrific, and terrific use of the word vamoose.
Vamoose, haven't heard that in a while.
I might be wrong, but when I was reading it, I just wondered whether, although you're clearly very cross about what happened, as lots of people are, whether there was a hint of understanding that this thing that they were up against was an impossible thing.
Absolutely. I think where the frustration came in, I think, was not so much at the start, although the tales of, you know, £15 million contracts being given to a friend who ran a pub and so on. That's understandably annoying. I think the frustration came more when the second wave happened. And again, the same mistakes were being repeated as had been made the first. I think first time around, people were willing everyone to let it work. You know, people wanted it to be successful. I don't think anyone was hoping that the whole thing would be a disaster and that the whole situation would get out of control. And I think there was a genuine understanding, you know, none of these people went into politics to do this. You know, that's not what they're... You know, they all went into kind of you know, be fiscal revolutionaries rather than have to deal with a pandemic. So I think there was a lot of learning on the job, as it were. And also I wanted to make sure that the portrayal of the consequences of these decisions was not a subject of a joke. That, you know, there are passages in the poem where I wanted to be quite raw and open with, you know, what we all felt, what different households felt at different times, the real pain and consequence of loss that people did go through, really, because I think that's something that we can all kind of understand and connect with, really.
And you mentioned a couple of, I think two, maybe three times, and you talk about sort of reaching out through screens.
Yes.
Which is the experience a lot of people have. You and I are having this conversation on Zoom now, but you lost your mother in the middle of it all. And
yes.
That last moment was through a FaceTime.
It was FaceTime, you know, and it's not what anyone would want. But I, you know, we had a funeral in London where six of us were, but, you know, our family in Glasgow weren't able to make it. So they had to watch on Zoom. And you know, I'm grateful for things like Zoom and FaceTime, you know, it allowed that to happen rather than us be completely shut off from the moment. But I wouldn't, you know, I think what other families went through, you know, was far worse in terms of, you know, the experience. My mother didn't die from COVID. She passed away at age 94. I think it was when the care homes closed down. And I think a lot of people will testify to this. I just think a lot of elderly people with dementia just shut down because they couldn't process why nothing was happening anymore, you know. So I was aware of that, but I'm also aware. So that's, I think, I'm grateful. I'm glad that there were things like FaceTime and Zoom to allow at least some semblance of contact to happen. I think the other side of it was this kind of in the early days of the pandemic when people tried to think Zoom could solve everything. So we could have like cheese and wine parties by Zoom, you know, which I just thought was, well, it's fundamentally just you alone with some alcohol, really, isn't it? Staring at a screen. It's not really a party. So that's where I thought, okay, we've reached our limit in what this technology can do.
There was a point where, at some point, I think, I remember thinking, imagine this had happened in the early 90s.
Yes.
And that would have been a very, you know, the fact that I could, after we got one for her and it was in store, you know, speak to my gran on a Facebook thingy.
Yes.
You know, albeit with Nick Clegg listening in. But, you know, that ability to have something resembling a face-to-face conversation with lots of people.
Yes.
When 30 years ago, we'd have been taking it turns on the landline.
I know.
It's just a very different, weird experience.
I remember growing up with, like, we had one phone and it was in the hall.
Yeah.
Without a seat next to it. So my memory of catching up with my friends was just either standing in the hall or lying on the carpet, kind of phoning them.
Yeah.
And no one else being able to kind of, you know.
I remember at one point being very excited to discover another friend of mine had a fax.
Oh, wow.
So we went through a stage of sending each other faxes, but obviously you had to phone them first to make sure they were standing next to the fax.
But there was... There was something about all that equipment that even then you knew it was rubbish, didn't you? You just thought, like, your facts, this is just, why is this so bulky? Or
that very thin paper, the really thin...
Shiny paper. VHSs, yeah. I always thought, this is rubbish. I know this is the cutting edge of technology. But I also know this is rubbish because it's big. I don't know where I am and the, you know, duration-wise. I have no way of knowing where into the film I am, other than...
Maybe that's why things like CDs and DVDs just look like they're from the future.
Absolutely.
They look better.
Yeah. How we miss those.
Well, we'll keep talking in a moment. It's Matt Cholley on Times Radio, speaking to Armando Iannucci, talking about his book, Pandemonium, some verses on the current predicament. We'll continue our chat after this.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Looking for inspiring stories? Listen to the EY Leading Into Tomorrow podcast. It features compelling stories from leaders across government and the public sector who've transformed their organizations and services. From the impact of grants to how digital innovation is reshaping affordable childcare, you'll get actionable insights and ideas that can be used around the world. Download Leading Into Tomorrow by EY wherever you get your podcasts.
Matt Cholley on Times Radio, in conversation with Armando Iannucci, speaking about his book, his mock epic poem, Pandemonium, some verses on the current predicament. But you'll know him because he created The Thick of It and The Day-to-Day and Alan Partridge and Veep and David Copperfield. Basically everything. Everything good that you know and we talk about endlessly on the show. Yeah. Armando Iannucci is here.
I didn't create David Copperfield. I'll give Dickens that one. But yeah,
very generous,
but yeah, the film. Yeah.
So let's talk about where we are you've done TV. You've done radio, TV, film. Now mock epic poem. Where does the world of Armando Iannucci's satire go next? Is it contemporary dance?
I think it has to be the metaverse, which is, you know, which the full glory of which is only days away. I think, you know, the promotional video that...
I mean, the promotional video looked like something you create.
It looked terrible. And I just wonder, I mean, all of it was bad. All of it, you know, the terrible delivery. But fundamentally, and this is the crucial bit, the depiction of the metaverse looked so awful and so cheap.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, Mark. Hope I'm not interrupting. You got a sec? Have you got Oppie with you?
I think Oppie's still in the virtual forest, but I always have time for you. What's going on?
Look, I just love the presentation so far.
I can think of within Facebook, or Meta, as we're meant to call them now, no one could say to Mark Zuckerberg, don't do this, you look like an idiot, because everyone was scared. So... And also the sheer arrogance to name his company after a concept that presumably is meant for all of us to engage in. It's like, say, calling his company Thought or something like that. You know, it's not yours to own, Mark. It really isn't.
And also it's a word, meta as a word, has a very specific meaning that you need to use at a very specific time. You know, you probably do it in your, you know, that is that idea a bit meta?
Meta.
Now
it
means something different.
It's a slight, and it's also slightly, you know, within comedy, it's slightly a derogatory word.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when people are being clever about something and commenting on the form within the form, you know, you say, that's a bit meta, as in that's a bit not as funny as you think it is, but you get away with it because it's clever. Yeah. It's that. So as I say, no matter which angle you come at it from, it's bad. It was a black hole of concentrated badness. With Nick Clegg at the centre. the complete absence of light that is Nick Clegg at the centre.
Now, another thing I want to ask you was, I think it was earlier this year, I interviewed Anthony Jay, who obviously co-created Yes Minister. And we talked quite a lot about, you know, their intention from doing Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister. And I said, you know, was it just about, you know, making a funny sitcom? And he said, no, we wanted to, you know, shine a light and hopefully improve things. And he felt that actually it had the opposite effect. And what it had done had created such cynicism about professional people, Whitehall, lifelong civil servants and their role in holding everything up, that he feared he'd slightly created Dominic Cummings. And this, you know, so somebody could build a career on coming in to smash everything up and all that. And then I got, knowing I was speaking to you, it got me thinking, is there a thing with the thick of it, that sent up, you know, that sort of Blairite New Labour world of spin. Did you make the perfect the enemy of the good in order to end up where we are now? That people fell out with the New Labour era and now we are where we are. Is this all your fault, Amanda Iannucci?
I prefer, unless people can prove otherwise, I'm prepared to say it's not all my fault. It would be a very boring comedy if it just showed some ministers getting on with their job, being unhassled by distractions. But also, I based it a lot on research, and the proof of it really, of its accuracy, was whenever certain programs would go out, we'd get calls a couple of weeks later from within Whitehall of people saying, how did you find that out? Because we kept that quiet at that moment. And we're thinking, no, we were just making it up, but are you now confirming that it did take place? And the thing that I always mention is, and forgive me if I've already mentioned it to you before, is the very first episode where they have to come up with a policy that costs nothing, but which sounds quite good, in the back of a car within 40 minutes.
What we need is something that the public want, is incredibly popular, and is free.
Return of capital punishment.
That's a joke, right? You are joking, yes, obviously.
Yeah.
Come on, Ollie, come up with something.
I actually got the cast to improvise for a couple of minutes, and three of the policies they improvised within 5 years had become law.
I used to know this because I've written about this. So let me remember the spare room bedroom tax.
That's
the spare
right.
Bedroom tax. Plastic bags.
Plastic bags. One? Permanent plastic bags. And pet asbos was the other
pet
one.
Pet asbos, of course. Yeah.
And also, you know, I did stop the thick of it some time ago. But my timeline in Twitter is full of comments from people going, well, I think what's happening now will put Amanda Iannucci out of a job because it is so beyond anything he would do. Which is true, you know. So
Is there an element of truth? Is that why you're now doing a show set in space? Because a show set in Whitehall wouldn't work?
Well, the attempt was to get away from, you know, the current predicament and try and, you know, look at social behaviour. Avenue 5 is really about social behaviour. But, you know, when the first series went out, it went out at the time all these cruise liners were being stuck in ports and the passengers unable to get off. And we did there is an episode where passengers are convinced that they're still on Earth and go through the airlock and die, but still keep going through the airlock. You know, just as people in America were trying to say this pandemic is made up. It doesn't exist. The hospitals are empty. It's all a conspiracy and so on. So I suppose there's part of me that can't, I think anything you write, really, whether it's historical or science fiction, is about the present. Inevitably, it is.
And that's why, you know, that's one of the reasons why Shakespeare still has appeal, because you watch it and you think, oh, that's like, you know. Oh,
absolutely,
like,
yeah.
You know. Now, the other thing I want to ask you about was, the annual tradition of the Chorley household is that we watch Knowing Me, Knowing Yule.
Oh, right.
The Alan Partridge Christmas special.
Okay.
Which is still a standout.
Stand up?
Yes, it completely does. Although there are bits, which I always sort of slightly forget about, there are bits where I wonder, well, I don't know if they would do that now.
Right.
Do you rewatch your old stuff? And
I don't, no. I mean, occasionally you catch something as you're flicking on, it comes up on Dave or something like that. But I don't, no, I don't. I think, A, you'd go mad if you just...
just sit down and watch some of my old stuff?
Yeah, I think Christmas morning I'm going to start off with a... a little bit of Time Trumpet, I think, just to what has been interesting, obviously, is my children have grown older and have found these things for themselves and seeing whether they still stand up, you know, hearing their reactions to them. So I don't, and I think you're right. Also, you're right, you know, tastes and just certain tastes and I was going to say standards, but that's not the word I'm after, but just your sense of what feels the right thing to say and what is pushing the point or crossing the line, that changes over the years. So inevitably, I'm sure, you know, if I dug stuff out from 20 years ago, there'd be bits in it I'm thinking, well, I wouldn't write that now, you know, because that's, I think that's inevitable, really.
The question about sort of the pressure from, and it doesn't matter what you call it, wokeness, cancel culture, the being constantly policed by your, when you're in your writing, do you worry about that?
No,
today?
I don't really. I
not,
kinda...
that, not that you're Bernard Manning, and you know you well, ought to be worried about it.
No, but you know that's obviously, you know, there is an opening there.
A new direction.
A new direction, you know, for GB News or something. No, I don't. Not personally, no. I kind of feel, you know, I spend most of my career trying to work out, you know, where the line is. Telling myself, with each project, I tell myself, where is the line? You know, where roughly, where do you feel you're stepping over the mark? And every now and then do it anyway, just to see what happens, you know. And I still sort of feel that, but I don't set, I don't write anything setting out to annoy people or offend people. I just set out to write what's funny. But you know, my sense of what personally I find funny tends to circulate around either embarrassment or awkwardness or, you know, challenging people's perceptions. I also do think, you know, fundamentally, what's wrong with being offended? You know, it's good to be offended because it tests your own beliefs. You know, if you've got a certain set of beliefs and you can't take a joke, then I sort of feel you might, those beliefs aren't as strongly held as you might think. I think it's worth actually, and the thing we have lost, I think, is that tendency to debate, you know, to seek out someone who has an opposing point of view and to challenge each other about it. Because that way you can test your own, you can test whether you've thought through your own opinion properly enough, you know, by having it challenged.
Also, just the idea of just thinking, I don't like him, so I'm not going to watch it.
Well, yeah, there is that.
Rather than like just shutting it down, you know.
Yeah.
Mrs. Brown's Boys, not to my taste.
Don't like it. I'm going to campaign for it to be taken off.
Exactly.
They must never work again. and the people who commissioned it obviously need to go to prison.
Yes, they'd have their homes raised to the ground.
Raised to the ground, you know.
It's a very weird sort of reaction to, I don't like something, so therefore it must not exist.
It's like, you know, I think we should start by going, well, I disagree, rather than, you know, there is, and we can certainly work our way up to it. I hope I didn't shatter your needles too much when I did that. But, you know, there are gradations.
Yeah, there are ways to it. So, Avenue 5 is in the can. That obviously needs to be edited. What's the next big? What's the next thing on the horizon for Amanda Iannucci?
I'm looking at doing another film next year, but it's all it'll be set in the world of social media. But other than that, I was going to say I cannot say. I mean, I cannot say because we're still writing it. But I kind of want to leave it slightly under wraps. Other than it should be, so it will be contemporary, I'll leave it at that.
That sounds good. That sounds dangerously like it
really?
Is in the metaverse.
Well, I hope I'm glad it sounds good because you know what I just said sounds very vague. But
well, you know,
if I can persuade some financiers as well to
exactly
finance it, then that would be great. But no, we're all set to go with it, and. And I'm kind of looking forward to it, really.
Amanda, it's been lovely to speak to you. Happy Christmas.
Thank you very much.
Best of luck. If someone's listening to this and they need to do some last-minute shopping, you've got a couple of days. Pandemonium, some verses on the current predicament. I loved it. It really made me laugh. I thought it was terrific. So,
thank you.
Amanda, really good to speak to you, and a happy Christmas.
A happy Christmas to all your listeners throughout the world.
That was Amanda Iannucci there, and we've got some absolutely cracking Christmas treats for you coming over the next week. On the podcast, you'll be able to hear the Panto, my Christmas selection box with Mariella Fostrop, a special focus group with Times Radio columnists, a look back over some of the best the Prime Ministerial chats with Andrew Jimson. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast. If you are out and about and travelling, or if you're self-isolating, don't worry, the podcast is going to be with you every day, all the way through to the new year. But for now, from me, it's a very Merry Christmas, and I look forward to catching up with you again in 2022.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Looking for inspiring stories? Listen to the EY Leading Into Tomorrow podcast. It features compelling stories from leaders across government and the public sector who've transformed their organizations and services. From the impact of grants to how digital innovation is reshaping affordable childcare, you'll get actionable insights and ideas that can be used around the world. Download Leading Into Tomorrow by EY wherever you get your podcasts.